You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to the show. Oh my goodness. Another week. Here we are in the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host on the Civic Media Radio Network. As always, thank you guys for hanging with us. I know last week we had we did Mark Scogan again. Good to hear from him. And we are here this week. This is exciting. I'm super excited for this because we got back to school. That's coming up. Gulp. And there's no one better to get us into the swing of things than Dr. Jill Underley, who is the superintendent of public instruction here for the state of Wisconsin. Dr. Underley, what's going on?
Everything, everywhere, all at once, Mark. How are you?
Right? I'm good. Hey, I saw that you were in Door County celebrating your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Welcome
Thank
to the great much. Northeast Wisconsin, you know.
Love it.
How was that? What did you do up there?
It was gorgeous. It was beautiful weather. It was serendipitous because the Tall Ships were also in town.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, how cool.
When we were there. Yeah, so that was cool. And I'm a former social studies teacher, and I'm really into that kind of stuff. So it worked
I am
out
too.
Really well.
You can like nerd out a little bit on history and stuff.
Oh, dude,
yeah.
100%.
Oh, I love that.
And I also nerd out when I'm in Door County anyway, because I just love the history. I love geology. You know, I love lighthouses. I love, you know, the Coast Guard. There's the Maritime Museum. We stayed at a friend's house, and she's maybe a block from Lake Michigan. So she's on the east side of the peninsula. And we just walked, you know, I just walked everywhere, and it was just really refreshing and just rejuvenating. And it was a great way to ring in my next trip around the sun.
So, good for you. I own a car dealership, and we had a guy that came in who bought a car from us, and he was an archaeologist, and he goes from, you know, site to site and constructions and all that. And I said, what was the craziest thing that you ever found? And he said that in Door County, right by, I think he said it was Bailey's Harbor, he found a 1,000-year-old arrowhead that was stained with blood.
Oh my.
I know. And I was like, what? That's,
yeah. Like, wow.
Wild. How crazy is that? So yeah, I mean.
Oh yeah.
So crazy. I nerded out a little bit on that too, because that's so cool.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So now back to school. Here we are. What is new? This year, what is new with DPI? What can you tell us is coming up here for this school year?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is my favorite time of year. I like lots of parts of the year, of course, but back to school, and I think it's partially because I have an August birthday, so it seems like you have your birthday, and then it's like all the back to school stuff, you know, the open houses, the professional development, you know, just the excitement that there is around a brand new year. But it's, you know, it's more than just, you know, the start of a new school year, right? We're, you know, reconnecting with kids, we're reconnecting with colleagues. You know, it's just that, you know, at DPI, we've got a lot going on always, but it always comes back to this simple idea that every child in Wisconsin deserves a great education, no matter their zip code. And we are invested, right? We are helping schools get ready for the year. We're helping them with, you know, getting their funding. You know, we've got a lot going on at the federal level, of course. But it's just this underlying philosophy that when we invest in our kids, we're investing in the future of Wisconsin. And so at DPI, we are finishing up our strategic plan. We had, you know, done lots of listening sessions throughout the state. And we reorganized as a result of that strategic plan just so we can better serve our school districts. And so I'm excited about that. There's other things too. You know, of course, we're still implementing the new literacy bill, which was Act 20. We've got things around there. But the bottom line is that we're just really excited, you know, to welcome students, families, and educators back to school.
So a stronger DPI for Wisconsin was the reorganization. What is that going to look like for school districts? Are parents going to notice anything? Is it more on the administration level, the teacher level? What's that going to do?
I hope people notice, you know, like when you talk to people about DPI, a lot of times they've never really interacted with them unless they are a teacher and they're like, well, you know, maybe I've had to get a license or maybe, you know, I wanted to become a substitute. Schools, of course, will have more interaction. Parents may have some interactions if there's an issue with their school and they're not getting resolution. But what we did was, you know, as a result of our strategic plan, one of the things that came out of the listening sessions was that we need to modernize some of our operations at DPI and make us more responsive, really, to the changing needs in our state around education. You think back, it's been maybe 30 years since DPI really reorganized.
No kidding.
And a lot has changed in those 30 years. Yeah. And so we have to work smarter. You know, we have to be better positioned to serve all Wisconsinites better. So as a result, you know, we had these listening sessions. We talked to parents, students, school board members, educators, other leaders in communities, and they helped us shape this portion of the plan. And so it helps us. We realigned some of our systems so that we can be more responsive to schools. We want to make sure that we're getting back in touch with schools within, you know, 24 or no later than 48 hours from if they have a concern. You know, we're also trying to work better together on things, you know, not just with our school districts, but within DPI. And so part of the reorganization, we've removed some of those silos that we've built over 30 years, you know, and we've worked to put out, you know, put our experts who are working with us, you know, closer together across the agencies so that we can just, again, better serve our school districts and ultimately, serve the kids in the communities here in Wisconsin.
So was that something that you were the champion of, or was this something that was like on the horizon, like we got to do this? And were you just like, okay, this is, we're going forward, guys.
Yeah. We just went for it. And it was something that I had wanted to do.
That's hard, by the way.
Oh, 100%.
Like really, really hard.
Yeah. If it was easy, we would have done it sooner, right?
That 30 years, right? Right.
Right. And like I said, a lot has changed. I mean, think of 30 years ago. I was, you know, I was 18 and I, you know, it was just on the cusp of email.
Yeah.
We didn't have like standardized testing that was required. We didn't have school report cards. We didn't have, you know, I think about all the technology that we have in our schools. Like there was just, there was a lot we didn't have. And as things change, you know, as laws are made or initiatives are created, or and every superintendent that has been, you know, before me also had, you know, their way of leaving their mark.
Right.
I mean, we just kind of like piled on in certain things. And so I think over time, it's kind of like we lost focus of really what's important. We were still doing the things that we were required to do, but were we really putting our energy and our focus on the things that truly mattered to the people in Wisconsin? So that was a big piece of it, you know. And like I said, you know, it just helps us better support our educators and our families and ultimately our kids.
I think your background is really unique, and I think it gives you a pretty good perspective of, you know, you probably knew a little bit of where that discussion was going to go when you were doing reorganization, because you were an administrator and you were, you know, a principal and all of that in a rural district. And you've always been very outspoken fighting for the interests of rural school districts, which I appreciate. My kids go to a rural school, but talk about that.
No, I was just going to say though, like what really kind of was the, you know, the impetus behind this was really COVID.
Oh,
because
sure.
As you said, you know, I had been in a school district. I was in a school district during COVID. And it was just, think how education just changed just from COVID, right? You know, like we think about like the relationships in our community changed, relationships between our school districts changed. You think about like how we delivered instruction and changed. We saw, you know, spikes in truancy and chronic absenteeism. And some of that strategic planning came out of asking kids, like, what is it that you like about school? Why is it that maybe you're not engaged in school? And so just learning from kids and listening to what they had to say, you know, for example, with the absenteeism, we found out, like, and some of the stuff I kind of knew because I worked with kids every day. I would talk to them all the time. And they would say, well, I like coming to school for my career and tech ed classes. I like coming to see my teachers and I see my friends, but I know that we don't have to do school this way all the time because you showed me during COVID, I didn't have to be here all the time. Mm. And so, like, giving some of that innovation and flexibility that we learned during COVID and giving kids more agency. So that was a part of our plan. We have a part of our strategic plan that deals with innovation in education and making our instruction more personalized and more relevant, I think, for kids, and carving out more pathways for career and tech ed, because we know that's what keeps kids engaged.
Yeah, we're talking with Dr. Jill Underley, who's the superintendent of public instruction. I love that because when I was in school, I struggled. I have ADHD, man. And, you know, back in the day, it was not something that really teachers knew how to deal with. And, mm-hmm. you know, my son, one of them, he has that as well. Sorry about that. And, but it's really exciting for me to kind of see where education is going, where they can help that person. And it's not, you're a cast off or you're not as smart, because to be honest, I believe it's completely the opposite. You know, people that have those, you know, at one time they were considered learning disabilities, but they can do a lot of things and they're not stupid people and they're not, you know, lost.
Right.
And to see education kind of change is really exciting.
Yeah. One of the things that I've always tried to espouse when I was a teacher and when I was a principal and superintendent is that every kid brings gifts.
Yes.
Every kid has gifts, and everybody at their core wants to belong. And so that has always been one of my strongest guiding philosophies about education, is about belonging. And you're at your best self when you feel safe and you belong. And so that has been one of those principles that I've used to guide everything going forward, you know. So the kids with ADHD, and, you know, I have a child of my own, you know, with disabilities, and it's just at their core, it's like everybody wants to belong and everybody has gifts. And so it's our job to make it so that everybody belongs, and then also make it so that the conditions are right, that we can unlock everybody's potential when they're in our schools.
Yeah, I love that. And that's something that is awesome. And so, you know, to see that there are a little bit of differences between when we went to school and now is something that's exciting, because there's a lot of innovations in the world of education. And when we come back here after the break, I want to talk about a lot of the uncertainties that are happening at the state level and national level, and how do you, as the superintendent, really, you know, if we're talking about the ships, how do you guide the ship through devil's door or death's door? You know what I mean? Like, yes, right? Because there's so much stuff out there, and you really have to have a calming, you know, it's crazy. We'll talk about that here on the other end of the break here on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Begger, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are sitting down and talking with Dr. Jill Underley, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction. We were just talking about how, and it's that I love how you put it, how everybody has gifts and it's up to education to unlock those gifts and help children find what they want to do. And that's so cool. I love that. And I want to talk a little bit about all of the rough waters that education is kind of having to navigate through. There's so much uncertainty, you know, in stuff from the federal government, and now, you know, signing things like all of a sudden the president wants to do a fitness test again, who he probably couldn't pass himself. My words, not yours. And all of these things where, you know, it's seemingly changing every day. And how do you, as the superintendent, just work through those challenges?
Yeah, I think that's just it. You work through it, right? And I look at our school districts, and it's been the reality for far too long, right? That our school districts have had to deal with is that they are, you know, they've been asked to do more with less. I mean, they've been underfunded for decades. And, you know, our state legislature has, you know, left districts just really struggling to meet rising costs, you know, while still trying to deliver that high quality education to every child. I mean, we do fairly well in Wisconsin. I mean, despite, you know, our funding challenges, but I truly believe that because, let's say, before Act 10, so this is before 2011, we were investing in our schools, and we were, you know, our schools were getting 2/3 funding. We were getting higher special education reimbursement rates. Our teachers were, you know, getting paid relatively well compared to other states. We were at the very least, the top third when it came to how we were funding our public schools. And so it's kind of like we've been running on those fumes in the past 15 years, or the past decade at the very least. And it's, you know, we keep passing these exit signs. If life's a highway, or if public education funding's a highway, our car has been passing, we're nearly out of gas, and we keep passing these exits, which are our school, you know, which are our state budget goalposts, right? And it's going to be just a matter of time before we pass the last exit and we can't fill up our gas tanks anymore. I mean, we are just, our schools are struggling. And the way that they get through this is by passing local referendums to their local property taxpayers. But we know that not every school is able to pass it. Not every community wants to support it because perhaps they can't afford it. And so we're really, you know, looking at this reality that inflation continues to drive up the cost of everything. When you defer maintenance, it's kind of like you can either pay for it now or you pay for it in 3, 5, 10 years, and it's going to cost, you know, 50% more or 100% more than what it would be now. You know, our state budget with the increase in the special education reimbursement, that was helpful, right? That gets us moving in the right direction. It's a start. But if we truly want to prepare our kids for the future, we have to commit to sustained investment in our public schools. And we can't place that burden on local property taxpayers.
You said that we're almost out of gas and we're going to be running. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I mean, so this past budget, we didn't get in our school districts any increase in revenue, right? It was zero. Zero funded revenue. So they, and a lot of our schools, I want to say it was like over 2/3 of our schools actually saw a decrease in state aid. And so, you know, costs continue to grow, and, you know, the costs, especially in rural areas, when you think about, you know, the transportation costs of busing kids in large areas, and you think about the costs of special education and those services. And then you think about the decline in the resources that we're getting from the federal government, not just in regular education spending, but we also use Medicaid funding in our schools for a lot of services. And so when you think about these additional constraints, not getting a increase in state aid from our school districts, and 2/3 of our school districts are seeing a decrease overall, it's property tax limits, like the levy limits that our school districts can levy locally, which then force them to have to ask taxpayers if they can exceed those limits. And that's when they have to go to referendum. The budgets are really these opportunities. These state budgets are really opportunities to help our school districts out. When the legislature says, you know what, we're going to increase the amount that we put into public schools, that takes the pressure off of our local superintendents and school boards from having to ask our taxpayers to help them raise the revenue through referendum. So, you know, I was just trying to use like an analogy where if you're driving on the highway and you're almost out of gas, our public schools are on empty right now. And if every exit is a budget year and it's an opportunity to fill that tank up, our schools are, every time we pass those exits are closed. We can't even get off to get the funding. So we're going to run out of gas is all I'm saying. And if our communities can no longer sustain a public school, those public schools and boards are going to have to make some difficult decisions about cutting services, you know, or not hiring teachers or increasing class sizes, not giving teachers raises, which means then they could lose, you know, great teachers to other school districts. Or, you know, as we see, you know, periodically conversations among school districts as to whether they need to close.
We're talking to State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underley. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side of the break. Stick around. So you got the Rational Revolution, you got Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, if you like this discussion with State Superintendent of Public Education, Dr. Jill Underley, you can download this. You can visit us, civicmedia.us, subscribe, share it, all of that stuff, because this is a really an educational, no pun intended, time that we can really learn about how all of this stuff works. We got one more segment here. With Dr. Underley, and we were talking on the other end about funding and all of that. And this topic is really heating up all across Wisconsin. And I think what people need to understand is that we do have the money to pay for public education, but the state legislature is choosing not to do it. And I had an episode a couple weeks ago with a dear friend, Laura McCoy, who's on the Green Bay Public School Board. And I was approached by an old administrator who was retired, and he gave me, if you don't mind, I'm going to read what he said, because we were talking about vouchers and how much it hurts Green Bay. And what they did was the public school passed a bill or whatever that's going to show on the Green Bay Public Schools tax bill, the people that are taxes, they're going to show what is going to the public schools and what is going to vouchers. So people can see that all of this money that's taken off for education, it's not funding the Green Bay Area Public Schools as much as they think it is. Well, he said this. He said, Mark, vouchers do not cause public schools to lose money, no matter what Laura, you, or anyone else says. There is a state aid deduction for the vouchers, but schools make up that deduction by increasing the property tax. Vouchers increase the property tax burden for property owners, but they do not reduce the total funds available to public school districts. All schools have state aid reduction due to vouchers make up every penny of their revenue limit is increased by the same amount as the voucher state aid reduction. No money is lost. And then because we doubled down on it, the doubling down on insisting that vouchers cause school districts to lose money is just not true. I don't understand how someone can, especially someone who is in public education for so long, how can they come to that conclusion? I don't get that.
He's absolutely wrong. I mean, that's all I can think about when I hear that, you know, because it's one big contradiction.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, there's a state aid for deduction for vouchers. Yeah. that state aid is not going to public schools. So it's to the tune of $800 million a year, you know, and you
that's a lot of money.
That money. It is. And it's going to cost some school districts more than others, but it costs literally every school district in Wisconsin. So that's $800 million that we are taking out of our funding for public schools and putting it into a private system. And so I guess the way that I would explain this, I think, to everybody is the best comparison I can make would be like a park analogy. All right. So let's just say that imagine, you know, we have our public park system and that's how it works. We're going to use this as a school voucher kind of analogy, but we all pay taxes, right? And we're paying our taxes to keep our parks clean, safe, and open to everyone. So, you know, they're accessible to everybody. Everybody can use the park. If you are disabled, you know, there's ramps, there's programming for kids, there's all kinds of opportunities. The trails are manicured and maintained. The rails are up so everybody's safe, whatever it is. So whether it's the neighborhood park or whether it's a state park or the local basketball court, right? But then someone decides that they're going to open up a private park or a country club, as we called them where I came from, and they set up their own rules, okay? And they're going to say, at our club, our private park, we are going to decide who gets to get in. And we may not allow everyone to come in, you know, not everybody in the community could use it. You know, maybe if you've got some disabilities or maybe if your parents are of the same sex, whatever it might be. But now imagine that the state says, OK, so we're going to take money from the public park budget to help pay for the private park operations. And the public park system still exists, right? But it doesn't have the same amount of funding that it had before, because now it has maybe fewer staff, delayed maintenance, and maybe they have to close some buildings, right, or facilities. And to keep those parks running, your city has to raise their property taxes. So you're paying twice. You're paying for the public park that everyone can use, and now you're also paying for a private park that you may never get to use. And that's what's happening with school vouchers in Wisconsin. The state takes money from the public school aid, which is money that is meant to serve all kids in Wisconsin, and sends it to the private schools, which doesn't have to serve everyone. And districts try to fill that gap, you know, because that $800 million is not going now into the public schools. And so the districts try to fill the gaps, you know, whether by trying to lower their costs and programs or raising additional revenue through referendum and raising local property taxes. But in the end, the taxpayers are paying more, right? Because they're not getting that money from the state and they're having to make up for it. And as a result, you have fewer, you know, you have fewer children with access to the opportunities that that money is funding. Public dollars should fund public schools, just like public park dollars should fund parks for everyone. So that's kind of my way of explaining it. That money is not going to the public schools, no matter what this former school administrator wants to say. It's not, and that's where it's kind of confusing, I think, with his statement.
Right, and I from what I understand, as we talked to Dr. Jill Underley, Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, from what I understand, that number is potentially going next year to not just $800 million, but it's going to be like almost $970 million. Yep. Dollars.
Almost $1 billion.
Right.
You know, yep. Yeah. Almost $1 billion is what it's going to end up being. And it's because the caps on enrollment
right.
are coming off. Yeah.
And then, and the idea is, you know, oh, well, all they have to do is just go to referendum and then ask the taxpayers to pay it more. Like, how does that make sense?
It's not right. I mean, it's really, there's this inequity, right? And you see, just driving down the highway, and you see it in right. you see it in rural as well as in urban communities. I mean, the buildings are getting older, you know, and so they require more maintenance. And you also see it in the way that we, you know, we have teacher shortages. We're not able to keep up with teacher pay. You know, these are highly trained professionals, experts yeah. in their field, not just in child development, but also in content. And not everybody can do the job. And you have to pay professionals if you want to keep them. And so I think the last statistic I saw was this past spring when we did our teacher shortage report, we do one every year, that Wisconsin teachers are earning 20% less in real dollars than they were in 2010. So 20% less, you know, and you think about the cost of everything going up. Think about housing and childcare and the cost of a car. I mean, there's all these things that continue to go up. And if we can't get people to work in our schools because they can make more money, you know, and doing something else, it's we have to understand that these individuals are experts, but they also have families that they have to support too. And it's just not right.
What's the solution?
Well, I know that I get criticized often for saying this, but we really need to fund our schools. I mean, that's truly what it is. We can't support.
How would you get criticized for that?
Well, I do. I get it from, you know, mostly the right. Because they're like, oh, her answer is always more money. But it is, right? Like,
well, and it's not more money. It's just taking the money that should be there.
Well, that's right. You know, like the $800 million should not be going to private.
Right.
It should stay with public schools, but it takes money, right, to improve buildings. It takes money to give people raises. It's like that's truly it takes money to fill the gas tanks of buses. You know, it's really it's just the way it works, unfortunately. You know, we're a human resources heavy industry. But it's also not just on the backs of our schools alone. I mean, I think about, you know, our communities, we need more affordable housing. We need affordable childcare. We need, you know, a lot of things that just kind of help families, get through it. Right. You know, like you can even look at how we operate schools and making sure kids are ready to learn, making sure kids have access to healthy meals that are free or just heavily subsidized. I mean, they're required to be in school, and then we're going to say, oh, sorry, we're not going to give you any food. You know, it's like, it's just so weird. Like when you break it down, just the absurdity of it all that we tolerate it.
Yeah. And that's a pretty clear A to B line that you can draw, you know, of how, what the fix is. I'm hopeful that, you know, maybe at these midterms we can change some things and look at how we are not funding the public school. And what sucks is that, like, you know, voucher and charter schools this past budget got a huge bump in funding.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Public schools got nothing.
Yeah. And there's some examples where a voucher to a high school student is worth more than what we would give a school, a public school, high school. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, I know. And like you said, you know, and like I've said, you know, it's the money that we're putting into vouchers and private schools, that truly belongs to our public schools. And we need to make sure that it gets back to them so that they can continue to provide these services that serve all kids. And I think back, you know, it's like, our public schools are amazing.
Yeah.
And you look at the type of students we are graduating. I mean, they're going off and doing incredible things. And I know, like, James Lovell just recently passed away. He was a Milwaukee Public Schools grad, you know? And it's like, and then he went to University of Wisconsin-Madison. Yeah. And then he was in, like, the ROTC. And then he went to the Naval Academy. And then became an astronaut, you know, Apollo 13. It's like, holy cow. Like, you can read story after story of amazing things our public school students are doing. And it's like, we're just going to pull the rug out from under them, right? And say, you're on your own, kid. We're going to pull up that ladder. Somebody invested in me, but damn it, you're going to be able to have to do this on your own.
Right.
And it's like,
And the idea that in public schools, everybody gets a shot, that is not the same thing in a voucher or private school.
Right. Yeah. So, and then I think, you know, you said the other thing is like, we have to look at who's representing us, right? We have to make sure that we are sending people into our assembly and our state senate who are public school supporters. Yes. Like, they will invest in the future of the state, because we are, you know, if we, you, there's so many case studies across the nation. When you are divesting in public schools, the quality of life in your state is going to go down. The number of individuals who want to move to your state and start businesses or start their families is going to go down. The overall health of your economy and the health of the individuals personally will also decline. And so it's,
Dr. Jill Underley, thank you so very much for your time. I really appreciate it. We could go on for another hour, and I hope you do come back.
Yes, I can talk forever.
Well, let's have you back and do that. I would love that. So thank you so much. On the Rational Revolution, I am Mark Becker. We'll see you the next segment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near.
Welcome back. Thanks for hanging around. You know, I'm still getting used to these whole transition things where we got to wrap it up, you know, and we'll be back right after this. Okay. Bye. So thanks for, to Conrad, the producer, who's keeping me honest. And, I appreciate everyone listening and sticking around and all that stuff. I really appreciate hearing some of the things that Dr. Underley said. You know, when I was in school, it was not easy. You know, I had ADHD, and it was really, really hard. No matter how I tried, it was a lot of reminders of why I wasn't good enough. You know, there were teachers that would say that. I remember, you know, my German teacher telling me a couple times, "You need to go take a pill or something," you know. And it was really hard. I hated homework because it didn't always, you know, compute, and the wires didn't always connect. And it was difficult. And I even to this day, I see some of the commercials on TV about, you know, back to school and all of that. And I still get like PTSD, you know, from that. And I think that's, it matters a lot too, you know, to listen to your kids. When I had a math teacher, and I'm not going to mention their name, who was horrific to me and to a lot of students that I know in my school. And, you know, there was more than one occasion where this teacher would tell me how stupid I was and how I'm not going to amount to anything, and, you know, get used to what fryer oil smells like, and it's just, you know, you'll be flipping burgers and all this other stuff. And I'm someone who I've always thought, you know, the best way to get back at someone is to be successful. And, you know, it's a shame to me that this person now is not a teacher, but she's the superintendent of schools in a rural school district in, I think, Arcadia or something in Wisconsin here. But there, you know, it's important to listen to your kids, where if they're struggling with something, if there's a teacher or student or whatever that's making them feel that way, listen to them. Because, like, there's not everyone's meant for that role, you know? And it's because of teachers like that, and which is so sad, because she like rose the ranks and became the principal at the school that I graduated from. And I remember like classmates and that was in that same class that reached out to me, were like, "Oh my God, can you believe it?" Like, oh, what a train wreck. But I'm so encouraged to hear some of the things that Dr. Underley was talking about, of how every student brings something, and every student matters, and all voices matter, and people have gifts regardless of what they're dealing with. And I love that because so much has changed since I was in school. I'm not that old. Dang it, I'm not that old. But I see where my 8-year-old is going in life, and you know, he's got a lot of my traits, and I think he's got the one that is the 4-letter ADHD thing. But I think it's not a death sentence to his education. And I always say that what I learned in high school, what I learned in the hallways, was so much more important than what I learned in the classroom. And that was really only because there were teachers out there that didn't know how to properly instruct some people that didn't always get it, you know? And they would revert to, oh, you're stupid. Oh, you know, just get used to flipping burgers. You know, you're not going to be, we know, Mark, you're not going to be a rocket scientist when you grow up. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll own a business. Maybe I'll run for office and win 3 times. Maybe I'll do some things like that. And maybe one day I'll write a letter and so she can frame it and put it on her wall, you know? But I don't know. I'm so proud to be a public school graduate, even if it wasn't the most incredible experience of my life, because I do know that public education is really the most important thing that we can fund as a society, because that is our future. And I'm so excited to see where public education is going, because they are able to best help the best and the brightest, and also those people that are struggling. And so for us to kind of take some of those dollars and give it to a school that does still believe that, hey, you know, get used to flipping burgers, I think that is such the wrong thing to do. That is the wrong idea. We have to do better. And I'm thrilled to know that we are trying to do better. But it is really in spite of the state assembly and the state senate not wanting to do that. You know, the money is there. The funding is there to make sure our public schools are funded and funded well, but they're, again, just choosing not to do it. And that sucks. But what doesn't suck was this show. I really hope you enjoyed it. My thanks to Dr. Jill Underley, and my thanks to Civic Media for allowing me to say all these wonderful things on the radio every week. And I'm looking so forward to seeing you next week. I'm Mark Becker for the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stick around.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.